This week, the Rascals mince about Trump's lack of empathy, Zorn's puzzlement on Gary Johnson, and how much a first debate really influences voters.
It is Thursday, September 29th, 2016. The cat's away and the mice are about to play. I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Eric Zorn, the inspiring Tribune columnist who appears Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in the Tribune.
Our leader and moderator, John Williams, is not here today, so we will talk about him as much as we can and try to move on without him. And let's just start with the fact, I don't even want you to have to say it. It's clear I've put on massive amounts of weight since the debate on Monday, and I'm sorry for that.
Mr. Piggy.
You're just a fat slob. You're just a fat slob, Steve.
So I had predicted before this debate that Hillary Clinton would win and Donald Trump would pick up points in the polls. We don't know yet. I mean, I think we probably agree that Hillary Clinton did very well. She seems to have won by most of the polls. We'll see what impact that really has on the state of the race. But what did you guys make of the debate?
Well, we watched it together, Eric and I.
Oh, that's right.
We cozied up with some popcorn and a glass of wine. We had a viewing party. And, I mean, I'm pretty astounded that people actually think Trump acquitted himself well at any point during the debate. I think he started off terribly, and it was just downhill from there. I even stopped taking notes at one point. Because there are legitimate things that you can go after Hillary Clinton on, and he didn't do any of that. So to me, that's just clear. Clearly, he was unprepared, and you know, he tried to just talk his way through it like he has done in previous debates. But now, when it's one on one, it's different.
Train wreck. What did you
train
think?
Train wreck. Maybe I just watched it out of fear because I thought he was doing pretty well. I think he did pretty well in the beginning, and then I'm texting back and forth with friends because I thought it was going to be a good night for him. I think that the negative reactions of his performance were greater than mine was. And then having my mind filled with them, I can see it now. I thought he was bad toward the end. I thought he missed a lot of chances with her. And, you know, what did you guys make of the idea right away people were coming down, I know Fox and others, against Lester Holt and the questions he presented to Clinton and then Trump? And I'll say it this way. I was emailing with a friend of mine who has worked for Republican politicians here in the state, really smart guy who I really respect. And he right away bid on the, Holt was unfair sort of thing and was defending Trump. And this is a guy who I never thought would defend Trump. He's a kind of a Republican who's come home to Trump. Thinking about it, Hillary Clinton might have been hit harder than she was. What do you guys think?
Well, just statistically, Lester Holt did interrupt or challenge Trump, I think, 7 or 8 times, and did not interrupt or challenge Clinton at all. Zero. So if you're just looking at from that point of view, I could see why people might think that. But I thought he threw kind of softball questions. He started out with, you know, what would you do to bring more jobs back to the United States that would put more money in the pockets of Americans? I mean, to me,
big fat pitch. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a meatball. So I kind of liked that he just let them go at it. I thought it gave a better perception of who they are. And I thought she looked, for all of the criticism that she's, you know, scripted and careful and robotic, she seemed very natural and relaxed to me. And I think that's what she needed to do.
She got more comfortable as the debate went on. And as she was clearly reveling in the fact that she was able to get under his skin. She was like sticking in these shivs that she had prepared. The only thing I didn't care for was that she had that one line about trumped up trickle down, that she liked that and she used it again. And I thought, you know, you use that once. And the idea behind some of these lines is that you want to use them like, it just came to me. Like, I just thought of this.
Yeah, and he said that. He said, you're the one who says that, or you made that up, or something like that. I thought that I wish that he had asked her about the basket of deplorables. I think that's a relevant question, and it's a going forward question. I'm happy that we weren't so bogged down in the history. I mean, I think she addressed emails because Trump brought it up. But I do think that she might have been asked about the deplorables question.
Yes, how are you going to govern, if elected, how are you going to govern a nation you've called essentially 20% of them deplorable?
And irredeemable.
And irredeemable.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think, I think Trump let go a lot of the ways, you know, she likes to make class warfare a centerpiece of her campaign. She's going to represent the middle class. The wealthy need to pay their fair share. She is part of the wealthy. She and her husband have made $104 million off speaking engagements since he left the White House. I mean, those are some areas where he could have tried to make her seem less like the representative for the middle class, and he didn't. So
he was just so unprepared. And one of the things I heard people saying was, like, if you can't bother to prepare for a debate, 90-minute debate, how are you gonna prepare to be president of the United States?
Well, he mocked her for being overprepared, yeah, right? Or for taking time away to prepare.
She didn't seem overprepared. No. She seemed like she was very, very prepared. There's the Trump line has been, oh, he did well, and Trump has been saying, I did great, and look at all these click polls that said I did great. Unless these people are crazy, unless they're like Baghdad Bob, they have to know that he did very poorly. All the scientific polls that I know of show that he did really poorly, and that he's got to turn that around in his next debate. He can't keep having debates like this. The problem that they have is that this guy doesn't focus. He seems really untrainable. Like, you can get him in conversations, you can feed him some lines, but he won't apparently do practice debates, mock debates, get into hypothetical dialogues with a fake Hillary Clinton to figure out how he's going to work some of these points in. Lester Holt, to get back to that, Lester Holt did not give Trump the same sort of openings to deal in some of these difficult areas that he gave to Hillary Clinton, I don't think. But that's, you know, you have to be ready for that as a debater, that the subjects that are going to come up are not going to be the ones that you want to come up. So you have to learn how to move the conversation to that direction. I heard that Trump was complaining that he couldn't find a way to bring up Benghazi. You know, you got to be able to do that.
That's right. That's what practice
is
about.
That's what these debaters do, is you say, well, it's an interesting question you ask about foreign trade, but speaking of foreign countries, right. You know, I mean, things like that, seriously. And I think he's got to be better at that.
Okay, so let's get to, I don't know if I can ever remember where the morning after the debate kind of eclipsed the debate or moved toward that, where he threw a little gasoline on this Alicia Machado story, the Miss Universe, who he called Miss Piggy, and
Miss Housekeeping.
And then he went on Fox News the next morning, which really is the only place he talks now, right? I mean, Hillary Clinton was given grief for not doing news conferences. He now only speaks to Fox News.
Yeah, that's ironic, isn't it? That Hillary Clinton took so much crap for not doing
holding press conferences.
And now all he'll do is talk to Fox and friends. So, yeah, it's good. But anyway.
Then he talks about how this woman had gained massive amounts of weight and she was so much trouble. I mean, he only made it worse for himself. Is that... How does a guy do that? Is it because he's, you know, he is delusional and he really thinks he won that debate, or what could he have been thinking?
It's not unusual, you know. That is a crude, rude, obnoxious thing to say. That is not out of character with his persona and who he is. And I think he looks at it legitimately as, you know, if you're going to participate in Miss Universe, if you are going to be part of the pageant community where a swimsuit competition is part of what you're judged on, then there's probably something in her contract where she had to maintain a certain weight. So could he have said something a little nicer the next day? Of course. Did he? No. But we are obsessed with weight in this country. I mean, you have the New York Times fashion columnist routinely calling out women on the red carpet who are big girls or wearing dresses that don't fit their plus size frames. Lots of people do it, and it's wrong across the board, but I can't say that I don't understand to a point. If you are going to get involved in the pageant world, that's probably comes with the territory that
question,
you have to maintain.
It's a question
a
of how you treat somebody who is having, if she's having weight issues, how you treat them, how you talk to them, how you talk about them. And then there was this issue that Steve brought up, that the next day when he had a chance to say, you know, that was 20 years ago and I regret saying some of the things that I did and she's a lovely person. You know, instead he went on about how much weight she'd gained. Apparently it was only 20 pounds. He's like saying 60 pounds, but she's saying it was only 20 pounds. But Claire McCaskill, the senator, said...
Well, he tends to round up, I think.
It was clearly a moment for, you know, clean up on aisle five.
Right,
and
right.
Instead, Trump knocked five more bottles off the shelves. I mean, it was an amazing lack of... He's a graceless person. He's a jerk. And these are, you know, that came across so strongly. And I can see if you say, well, I want a graceless jerk to be my president. I can see that. I can't see denying that, though.
He is incapable of empathy, I think, right? He's unable to put himself in anyone else's shoes.
Kristen, how did you think he handled the birther question?
Terribly. I mean, excuse me.
Well, she's coughing.
I'm coughing. I'm going to start sniffling too.
Well, you know, Don didn't seem too good in Chicago, but anyway.
That's what I heard. I heard he didn't seem like he was very enthusiastic and perhaps unwell. But, I mean, so here was a chance for him again to maybe try to pull back on some levers that he had pushed, and instead he doubles down, and that's what he did during the debate. He's proud of the fact that he forced Obama to release his birth certificate. And I have to admit, I was not up to speed on, I mean, like, what? Why were we even talking about Donald Trump in 2011 when this supposedly happened? But no, he took credit for it. He was bragging about it during the debate, which, again, I was just sitting there shaking my head.
Question I would have for him in a debate is, what are you sorry about? What regrets do you have in your life? You've talked about, he's mentioned once or twice, maybe just once, oh, I've said some things I shouldn't have said. What are those things? Why do you say them? And why do you keep saying them?
I just lost my train of thought.
It happens.
I guess so.
You're having an Aleppo moment.
Aleppo?
Aleppo.
Aleppo?
He had another moment yesterday.
Yeah, he's had a series of moments now, and it's mind-boggling to me. Just think if you're William Weld, the guy running as the vice presidential nominee.
Jump in and help him.
Former governor of Massachusetts and perfectly capable, you know, wonderfully able guy, running alongside Gary Johnson, who was a Republican governor of New Mexico, who, you know, had that famous Aleppo moment on Morning Joe on MSNBC. He was interviewed by NBC, I think, last week and spoke with the Tagout Lakliff. Did you see that?
No,
He was talking about how it was important. He says, it doesn't even matter what I say on the debate. It's just important that I'm there to be presented as a third person. He goes,
Wait a minute.
You didn't see that?
No. Making a point that it doesn't matter what he says, or did he literally get tongue-tied?
No, he's making a point that it doesn't matter what he says, that he could speak with his tongue out.
And then last night.
And just please Google it, because he's interviewed by, I think, Casey Hunt is the woman's name, and she's startled.
I'm sure.
She's like taken aback. She jumps back with a... And that brings us to more recent
history. Last night he was on a forum, MSNBC, Chris Matthews hosted an hour-long forum just for Johnson and Weld. And at one point, he asks him, name a foreign leader you admire. And it was almost phrased like a gotcha question, because the way Chris Matthews followed...
He did, and he didn't give him any...
He said, come on, come on, name one. Then he said something like, Shimon Peres? And he goes, a living foreign leader!
And then he says, the former governor, or the former president of Mexico?
Who he couldn't remember. And then William goes, oh, Vincent. You know? It's like, oh, my God. And it was one of these moments where you realize that Aleppo... maybe a little brain fade or something like that. Not being able to name one foreign leader you admire, that shows, I don't think he's engaged. He's not a serious candidate at that point.
So then Chris Matthews goes to William Weld and says, bail him out here. He goes, I don't know, Merkel? You know, right away. Yeah, it's kind of pathetic that this guy is getting 7-9% in the polls and he can't name a foreign leader. I mean, I think... I don't know what that speaks to, but it's sad.
I've got a column online now. It's going to run in the paper on Friday, basically talking about my puzzlement that so many liberals are supporting and millennials are supporting Johnson. I mean, millennials, that tends to be a fairly liberal voting bloc.
Eric.
He's got, yeah, there are several things.
He says he quit, but I don't know.
I honestly wonder when I watch some of these clips if there isn't a little bit of substance.
I tell you, Bill Weld is smoking now, even if he wasn't before.
Yeah. But anyway, I interrupted you about your call. I read it. It is online. It's about Gary Johnson.
Was it inspiring or just?
I thought it was great.
It was so inspiring. I remember every graph.
Okay, so we had the debate. We're distilling the debate. There's going to be another one. There's going to be a town hall forum, which... I just don't like town halls, but it will be different. And, you know, we've done this throughout the cycle where the next event is the biggest event in the history of politics. And then there comes another one. So how much will we be talking about this first debate in 2, 3, or 4 weeks?
I think we'll kind of get past them. I mean, I always look back to 4 years ago. Romney did much better than Obama in the first debate. Obama admitted, you know, his staff were trying to get him to sit down and practice, and he wouldn't do it. He was a little too arrogant. So he came back for the second debate and did much better, and I think we'll see that with Trump, too. But we'll move on. We'll kind of forget all this.
History is sort of on Donald Trump's side, isn't it, that the guy who, well, I guess Romney didn't do well in the election.
It was
a close election. I think a lot of people forget that, but it was, you know, 49-51. It wasn't like he got his clock
yeah,
clean.
The first debate, I mean, this debate will go down in history for sure as one of those debate moments. This will be one that when they review debates in advance of the next debates, they'll talk about this one. The question is whether it's going to have any lasting impact on the voters. Like I say, the early polling, the scientific polling showed that people really thought Hillary Clinton did well. I think it's going to bring some of the people who are wavering about her back to her, and it's probably going to help her in the polls, but I haven't seen those results yet. We'll see them over the weekend, I think.
Are you listening to the Mincing Rascals? Sans the leading rascal. John Williams isn't around today. He's driving around the Midwest or something? I don't really even know.
Yeah, I don't recall what he said. Sorry, John. We don't remember.
Does he have a circus thing he's doing?
Is that what it is?
I think it is.
Yeah,
I really think it's
trapeze. Yeah. Right. And he's only doing it to wear the tights, which is odd.
Very good in the tights,
so,
for a man his age.
I didn't realize. Am I leading all of this, or is there anything else we want to talk about?
Kristen's got to go.
Okay.
So we should just wrap up and give our endorsements. You have an endorsement?
Are you endorsing?
What to read.
Or what to read, watch, drink.
What to wear, how to wear.
God, I'm having an Aleppo moment. I had something,
and
now
I've
forgotten it. So you start.
There's an excellent episode of the Reply All podcast, if anyone ever listens to that. It's a podcast about the internet, and these guys, and it talks about the locksmith scam. And basically, if you go on to Google and you're locked out of your house, you say locksmiths near me,
right,
you are going to step right into a huge scam that's run by these companies that try to lure you in with cheap locksmiths. Really interesting reporting.
You mean you don't get legitimate locksmiths?
You don't get legit locksmiths.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's really interesting.
Reply
All is the name of the podcast.
I really never lock my doors because I don't want to have to deal with that.
I started
watching Mr. Robot, finally. After being beaten over the head about it, you guys are just staring at me?
No.
I'm thinking of the song from the 1980s.
No, it's Amo Oragato, Mr. Robot.
There you go. Come on.
Sticks.
Some feeling into
this
it,
is,
Eric.
I'm watching it on Amazon, but I think it was a USA Network show. And this guy, Rami Malek, won the Emmy for Best Actor in a Lead Role just a couple of weeks ago. He plays this sort of, they're all computer nerds and they're hackers. And he is this misfit, morphine-addicted sort of guy, which sounds like a very pleasant show. But I've watched the first 5 episodes of it. Everyone says it's great. I'm all in, and I'm going to go home tonight and watch some more.
Great. Enjoy. I remembered what my thought was.
Oh, good.
The editorial board is interviewing today. Today is Friday, the day we're taping this. Heather McDonald, the author of War on Cops. And she's written a ton of database reporting based on Chicago crime. So Google her. She has some interesting things to say about the causes of crime, and we're going to get to sit down with her today.
All right. So that's going to wrap it up for the Mincing Rascals this edition. Thanks very much to Kristen Decker, our producer, engineer Ben Cortez. I'm Steve Bertrand with Eric Zorn and Kristen
McQuarrie.
I always want to call you Kristen Geimer, you know?
Why?
Because I went to college with her, and I'm still kind of soft on her.
You can just say K-Mac.
Why do I do that? Kristen McQuarrie. John, come back.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.